This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. Make sure that you go to my Facebook page and like Radio-Joy on Paper, because I really do appreciate it, and I will like you, and we can start off the whole day in a really great mood, because I am feeling happy today. I have two wonderful guests. My first guest, well, it is a very special day because it's a father and daughter team, and I'm going to talk first to the father, and I am so happy to welcome to Joy on, back to Joy on Paper, Mike Resnick, who is one of my favorite authors. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Patsy. How you doing?
Okay, great. Well, I am so happy to have you back again. You know, I often think about you. Well, I think about you almost every day, actually, because there I have your books right next to me. You know, it is always so much fun to talk to you. I know that you know, my listeners have. I have so many listeners who are writing sci-fi, and they always ask me, well, you know, who should I read? And of course I say Mike Resnick, because this is, you are so amazing. I know that
you're to be commended.
You have, of course, you know, you've won 5 Hugo Awards and I think nominated for 37. You've just about cleared every other award in the business. It's just so wonderful, the work that you've done. And wow, what are you up to now?
Well, right now I've just delivered the first book of a fantasy trilogy to Daw Books, and I owe them 2 more. And I'm collaborating with a couple of different women, with Mercedes Lackey, who your readers probably know, she's quite a bestseller. She and I are collaborating on a horse racing fantasy called Win, Place, and Fly. And I'm also collaborating with Jody Lynn Nye, and she and I are doing one called Ophir, which is based on special knowledge I have on Africa. If you will grant just one fact, that King Solomon's Mines existed at one point, I know where they are and why nobody's ever found them. And we decided to write a book about it. So that's what I'm doing. I'm in the middle of 4 books right now.
Wow, so you are always busy. You've already written, I think, over 70, right? And
In science fiction, I think I am closing in on 80. I've done some mysteries. I've done some nonfictions, but science fiction's my métier.
And, of course, how many short stories now? The number.
I'm just short of 300. I think I'm 286, something like that.
Wow. And, of course, you do like to collaborate with other authors.
Yeah, I do. It's a way of bonding with friends who I probably won't see for years at a time. I've collaborated with people in France and Australia, all over. And also, I collaborate with what has become known as Mike's writer children. Whenever I find a talented newcomer, it's not the friendliest field in the world, a newcomer, so I buy from them for my magazines or my anthologies. I collaborate with them to get them in print. And at conventions, I take them around, introduce them to editors and agents. Somebody saw 4 or 5 of them following me around like chickens following a mother hen. And that's when the term Mike's writer children arose.
Well, I know. I've talked to some of them over the years, and they are... all of the young authors are so grateful for your support, because, it, as you said, it is not easy to break into the business. It's a difficult thing, and it means so much when they get their first story published. It really changes their life.
Yes, it does. And the flip side is that thank the people who helped me. I'm 76 in two more days. Everybody who helped me is rich or dead or both. So the only way I can pay the field back is to help the next generation.
Well, I think it is marvelous. And as a matter of fact, I knew it was your birthday because I have a special song for you.
Oh?
Oh, yeah, I do. And because it is, you know, I just love you. And so when I knew it was your birthday, I said, I have to have Mike on, and I have a song for you. So just listen here.
Happy birthday to you, and may all your dreams come true.
Happy, happy birthday.
I'm flattered beyond belief.
Well, I thought you would like that. I thought it has a nice beat. It's from somebody, it's called DJ Bobo, and I love the beat, and I thought it would relate very well to you because,
also,
of course...
I'm very surprised. You know, my birthday's not quite a national holiday yet.
Well, I would never forget it, and so I wanted to play this song for you. You know, it has a nice... African beat, and I thought, well, you know, it's appropriate for you because, of course, you love Africa.
Yeah, I've probably done more writing about Africa than any other science fiction writer, at the very least.
And, of course, let's talk about some of the books that are centered around Africa.
Well, I have one called Kirinyaga that is my most awarded book, I think. Worldwide, it's got something like 63, 64 awards and nominations. It just won a huge award in China as what's it called? The Galaxy Award. They're Hugo. And it was from a suggestion by Orson Scott Card. He was putting together an anthology of utopian colonies on terraformed planets and... basically, it had to be told by an insider who believed in this particular utopia. And he was talking about all kinds of utopias that he had assigned, a communist one, a thinking dolphin one, whatever. And I thought I would like to do one for East Africa. And one of the catch-22s was it had to be told by somebody who believed in it, not just a tourist who says, this is what I saw. And I thought it'd be an interesting story to... find the most heinous custom I could and have my narrator defend it. And among the Kikuyu people of East Africa, at the time at least, it was considered any baby born feet first was a demon, had to be put to death instantly. And I had the leader of that colony who was trying to establish a Kikuyu utopia, free of all Western influence, do that and then have to defend it against the people who ran the colony. And a number of stories sprang from that. And as I say, that was one that won. I had a Hugo and Nebula nominee called Ivory. I saw a photo of the largest trophy ever taken, or it wasn't even taken, ever found, the tusks of an animal called the Kilimanjaro elephant. They're about 11, 12 feet long, 230 pounds each. No elephant in history, except for that, has ever had tusks weighing as much as 200 apiece. And I got permission from the British Museum to go see them. They're not on public display because they think the elephant may have been poached, that he was not shot on license, which is ridiculous because back in 1898 they weren't giving out licenses. But anyway, they're not on display. I saw them. And I talked to my agent, and I said, you know, I think I could do a really interesting book following the tusks from when the elephant was killed or died in 1898 until the British Museum got their hands on them 40 years later, because I gather the tusks were originally sold at auction, and a number of the people who owned it ran into all kinds of serious problems. One got murdered, one got robbed, whatever. And she said, yeah, well, you know, we might be able to make a couple of $1,000s with that, but if you would remember that you're a science fiction writer and follow them for the next 6,000 years, we got a bestseller here. So I listened to my agent, and sure enough, we did.
That's wonderful.
And I've done an awful lot of stories about Africa. You don't want me to describe each of them.
No, but it is wonderful that you have written these stories. And, of course, Kirinyaga is a beautifully told story, and rightly so very, very popular. Now, you know, when you look back, I mean, this is a you've had an amazing career of writing all of these books, and you are still so active. And one of the things I always tell authors that you have to be out there selling yourself, because it is not, you cannot sit back sort of on your laurels. You have to be out there always promoting yourself. And of course, you have so many fans in the sci-fi community, and I know that over the years you did so many conferences. But that is one of the things that a writer has to do, right?
Yeah, you have to be available. In fact, you have to make yourself available for anybody who wants to talk. I have been a guest of at I think something like 55 conventions. That's a lot of very nice all expense paid vacations. But once I'm there, I got to work like hell, give speeches, sign autographs, talk to beginners, whatever, and. You've got to keep your name in front of the public, and you got to keep doing it by writing new stuff. It'd be nice if you could write one classic when you were 23 and live on it for 50 years, but very few of us can. For example, last year, I'm an old guy. I really am. I'm 75, and in 2017, I had out 6 books. This is what I do. I found out years ago, many, 50 years ago, that nobody phones or knocks on the door between 10 at night and 6 in the morning. And for more than half a century, that's been my work day. And I think I get a lot extra done by making sure nobody's going to interrupt or bother me during the time I write.
Well, you know,
as a matter of fact, I'm up early talking to you.
Why?
Ordinarily, I'd sleep till about 3 o'clock.
That's what I know. Sometimes you.
But for you, I would get up any old time.
Okay. Well, I'm glad because, you know, I think it's always so remarkable that authors really, of course, you have to love what you're doing. And it is a wonderful profession because you can keep doing it. As you know, Mary Higgins Clark is 89 years old, and she's still writing, and her books are as fresh today. Her last book, I thought, was as good as anything that she's ever written. And that's the wonderful thing about being a professional writer, isn't it?
Absolutely. There's nothing to stop you from continuing to produce. And in fact, the longer you've been doing it, theoretically, the better you become at it. And it's a very satisfying thing. You see your name in print, you please and hopefully influence readers and writers, and
it's fun. You know, it's fun.
A lot of fun.
It makes your life.
It's a real kick when you read a story you've written and it came out pretty much the way you hoped it would when you sat down to write it.
And to know that your books are translated into so many languages, and there are people in all sorts of straight, you know, all sorts of countries out over there in Finland, they're reading you, in China.
Yeah, my wife and I, we get invited all over because of that. We were just in Barcelona, a lovely city, and I'm there. I only know one person in Barcelona through correspondence, but a bunch of them got together and comped our trip and showed us the town, and we had a great time. I can't tell you how many countries we've been to just because I'm a writer and people in those countries like what I wrote.
And it just makes your life so full. And I've always sort of felt sorry for J.D. Salinger and Harper Lee. I know, you know, they had great books, And then they locked themselves away from the world.
Well, Salinger hid. I guess Harper Lee did, too, but yeah. Salinger was famous for hiding.
Oh, they hid.
Kind of contradictory.
Yeah, they hid. And there's so much joy that they could have bring to readers, because one of the things that we need to do is to encourage people to read more. And I think that when authors get out there and meet the public and do these events, it just helps for readers to feel, whoa, I have a connection to reading. It will open my mind. And I so admire all of the authors who get out there and intermingle with the public.
Absolutely. Most of my friends in the field do much the same thing. We all have the same basic attitude, which is, you know, we're having a great time. Let's share it.
Exactly.
Let's mingle with the public, tell them what we're doing, get them interested. Maybe some of them will want to write, too. You never know. By the way, speaking of others who might want to write, you have a guest coming up in a couple of minutes.
Oh!
Who I'm thrilled to tell you that, you know, it's my daughter. She probably outsells me these days. It's nice to know that she'll be able to care for me in my pending dotage, and I really like her books.
Oh, so do I. I love her books.
And she was one who never wanted to be a writer. She was around when I was starting out and having a horrible time getting in print and making a living. And she tried everything else first, but finally she wound up doing what she does best.
And she certainly does, because I love her books, and I'm so excited. I love to have this father-daughter type of interviews. I had Lawrence Block was on, and with his daughter, Jill D. Block. And, of course, you know, he's a fantastic writer, His daughter also had not planned to become a writer, and so she sort of put it aside and got into real estate. But then it was always there. She knew she had to write, and now she's like broken out. And recently, when she had one of her stories, printed in his anthology, it was really so wonderful to see the talent, and that she's got it, and it's exciting always to know, like in your case, that Laura Resnick is really another chip off the old block.
Oh, yeah. there are those who would say that she's a lot better chip than the block was.
Well, I don't know about that, because I love you both. Why? And you, of course, I've always really loved your mind. I've always wondered what it's like inside that brain of yours, all these neurons, you know.
Oh, it probably gets pretty weird from time to time.
I think so, because you are such a diverse writer. You write on so many subjects, and you have all of this both knowledge of you know, the past that you intermingle in your stories. I love your Western one. All of your Western...
Oh, those are fun.
Aren't they fun? They are just delightful.
All my life, I had wanted to write a book about Doc Holliday and Johnny Ringo, who were the only two college-educated gunslingers. And it looked like I was never going to. And then one day, one of my editors said, you know, give me a weird Western. And I said, what is a weird Western? And once he explained it, it was basically a fantasy. I said, well, can I use Doc and Johnny? He said, yeah. And that became a four-book series. I was having so much fun.
Well, and it is a fun series. So I want to tell all of my listeners that, of course, they can go to your website, which is mikeresnick.com, and they can find your books wherever books are sold, Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And, yeah. Mike, I want to so thank you for being a good friend to Joy on Paper. It always... it makes me so happy that you share your joy of writing with my listeners, because you are inspiring. As I said, I know that you've encouraged really hundreds of writers over the years, and that's what we need. We need writers who love to share the joy of writing.
Well, thank you. I think it's a natural outcome of loving reading. I mean, you become a writer because you've read a lot of stuff and liked it and want to do it. And the more people that you influence, the more there is for the next batch of readers. I mean, ultimately, the end result is not putting words on paper. It's having them read and admired or enjoyed.
Exactly. So, again, thank you for being on Joy on Paper today. Happy birthday to you.
Thank you.
You are just so fabulous, and I am so proud to know you. And now I'm going to play a little promo that we did for Laura's book.
Okay,
so listen in, okay? And sure. Bye-bye for now, but I'll have you back on again soon, okay?
Okay, fine.
This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper with the latest book buzz, and A Doppelgangster is the exciting science fiction and fantasy second novel of the Esther Diamond series by Laura Resnick. Here's the buzz. Esther Diamond, a New York actress, is resting between roles by working as a singing waitress at a Manhattan mob restaurant because, well, wise guys tip well. Then duplicated gangsters appear, bullets start flying, and it's up to Esther and her friend Max the Magician to fight evil by stopping the gang war before it starts killing the wrong people. And if she has time, maybe Esther can actually keep a hot date with her hunky detective friend Lopez, who doesn't believe in magic yet. Laura Resnick introduces a colorful cast of gangsters and their associates as she spins a witty, fast-paced mystery around her convincingly self-absorbed chorus girl heroine. Unplug all your devices and settle down for a fast and funny read with Laura Resnick's Doppelgangster. This is Rita Moreau reporting for Joy on Paper. Hey, for more of my suggestions on mysteries you should not miss, go to our webpage, www.radio-joyonpaper.com, and click on Book Buzz. That's radio-joy on paper. Rita Moreau, buzzing off for now.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow, and like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat, I would flip-flop all night long, I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you can move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed. It's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry MyPillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever.
MyPillow is now offering 50% off their 4-pack special.
Support Joy on Paper and local authors. Go to MyPillow.com and use promo code PATSY, P-A-T-Z-I, or call 1-800-871-1543. That's 800-871-1543.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z, and I am back with my next guest, Laura Resnick. Hi, Laura.
Hi, Patsy. Good to talk to you again.
Oh, it's so nice to have you back on the program. Well, I just was speaking to your daddy, and he is such a delight.
I guess.
Yeah, he is. I love him. And I played him a birthday song because it's going to be his birthday in a few days. And
yeah, on Monday.
Yeah. Well, he is just a fantastic author, and I know that over the years he has always been such a great supporter of authors in general, mm-hmm. and of course he is so very, very proud of you.
Mm-hmm. Is he on the air right now?
No, he's not. He's off the air now.
Oh, okay.
I couldn't get you both on at the same time. But, so we can talk about him.
No, I'm kind of surprised you got him up this early because, you know, he writes all night.
I know.
Usually asleep until early afternoon.
I know. And he wakes up just for me, you know. All I have to do is ask him, and he makes a special effort. Yeah, I know. He goes to sleep. I think he goes to sleep at like 5 o'clock, and so he might have had a little nap, and there he is, all bright and shiny, and ready to talk here on Joy on Paper to my listeners. So I'm always appreciative when he does that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm always like, if I have to get up really early for something, I'm like, well, if I ask him to do something for me at 8 o'clock, forget it, he'll be asleep. But if I could get him like at 6:30 a.m., he's just finishing work and he'll do it then.
Yeah. So it was just wonderful to talk to him. And I'm always happy to talk to you because, you know, I admire your work. Your Esther Diamond series is just a fun read. And I have a special correspondent, and so I said, well, you have to read, you know, Esther Diamond. And immediately she wanted to do a book buzz for you where she does a little promo, which I play every once in a while so that people...
That's fantastic. I'm happy to hear that.
You know, because it is important to keep your name out there and to get your name out there. And it's not easy. And that, I mean, that's one of the reasons that I do Joy on Paper is so that, you know, authors get that, you know, publicity when a book on their book release date. So a Tuesday comes along, your book is released, and you get some publicity. But then after that, you know, after even for the major authors, that window of opportunity stays open for such a limited time, and then nobody talks about you again.
Yeah, that's absolutely true.
And so that's
a very short window.
A very short window of opportunity. You have to make that splash. You have to get out there while you're newsworthy. Mm-hmm. And then after that, people forget about you. Hopefully not, but in the general sort of the world of radio and television and publicity, people forget about you. Now, that's why I really love to do Joy on Paper, because I will call an author up, and sometimes I surprise him. I will like a book, and I will, you know, just call them up and say, would you like to be on my radio program? They say, what? No, what? How, you know, I haven't done any publicity for years. And I say, well, yeah, but I like your book, so you should come on and talk about it. And so that's why I want you here today to talk. We'll talk about Esther Diamond. I also want to talk to you about your work. Are you still involved with the novelist? Inc?
Yeah,
quite
Novelist
a bit.
Novelist Inc. I'm still very involved with that. In fact, I for years on and off, I've been. Well, Novelist Inc. is an international organization for professional novelists. To join the organization, you have to have 2 published novels, and we just did another survey. The average member has, I think, it's like 24 novels published. So there's a very high level of achievement in the organization, which makes it, for all of us, a really great resource, because if I have any sort of professional question or problem, I can just kind of go on our internal communication in the organization and say, you know, oh, this thing just happened, or, oh, I'm trying to make this career decision. And people with years of experience as professional novelists will discuss it with me, and there aren't many resources in the world like that. So it's a terrific organization in that respect. And I was actually a founding member. I was a zygote at the time. It was many years ago. And it was founded back in 1989 by novelists who just really felt, people who were doing this as a career, who just felt there was a lack of exactly this sort of resource for them. And I've been a member ever since. I've served in a number of capacities in the organization. I was, for my sins, I was a president of the organization for a while. And these days I write a regular opinion column for the monthly newsletter of the organization. And I also I'm a volunteer representing the organization in the Authors Coalition of America, which is a network of multiple writing organizations that deal with various intellectual property rights issues internationally and stuff.
Well, the wonderful thing about this organization, you're going to have your convention right here in St. Petersburg, Florida, in September.
We are. In fact, I didn't even think of it because I don't get to go to the convention that often. We've been in St. Petersburg every year for about 4 years now. It's a great location for us, and I think, you know, we're going to be there for the foreseeable future. I know we're contracted to be there for at least our next two national conventions. So there will be a lot of novelists in your city very soon.
Exactly, and it's Tradewinds. It's going to be at Tradewinds, which is about a 15-minute drive here from the studio.
Oh, that's terrific.
So I hope that you're going to be coming down this year.
I am not, actually.
Oh, no, you have to come down. I want you here in the studio with me.
This year I can't be there. In fact, it's very likely at the same time I'm going to be in Washington, D.C. for a meeting of the Authors Coalition. However, I hope to come next year, but if you're interested, I would be happy to put you in touch with the organization. Like I said, there are so many really accomplished novelists who are going to be on site. You could get quite a lot of interviews done if you were interested.
Well, I would love to do that, and you absolutely have to put me in touch with mm-hmm. people, because I can have some of them come here to the studio and talk. So it depends on their traveling schedule. When they're here, they can come into the studio. And I might even be able to come down to the Tradewinds Hotel and do an on-site interview situation. So that would be really exciting.
Fantastic. By email, I'll put you in touch with the person you need to talk to. I think they'll be very interested, too.
Because it is, as I said, it's so important to help authors reach a wider audience, and mm-hmm. to just encourage people to read books. And here in this area, of course, we have all of these people coming here to vacation, and so I love to talk to them about how wonderful it is to pick up a book and head to the beach and read mm-hmm. while they're here. So that's one of the things I do. So I will just love to have people from Novelist Inc. here in the studio with me.
Mm-hmm. That'll be fantastic. Unfortunately, like I said, I won't be there this year, but hopefully next year I'll get down there. I really love that conference. I've learned so much. So I regret not being able to go this year and would love to be able to go next year. So hopefully that will work out.
Okay. And I know that some of my listeners and some of the local writers here in this area are also going to contact Novelist Inc. so that they can become involved both with the organization and with the convention while it's here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the convention tends to be really focused on educating members, so I don't know like how much involvement there can be for non-members, but that's not up to me. That's all stuff you can discuss with the people running the conference this year, which I'm not involved with. So.
Okay, I will. But of course, you know, one of the things that I was talking to your father about, you know, that he has, of course, written so much and over the years helped so many people. And it's a important role for a professional writer. You really have to get out there and promote yourself.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, publishers don't do much unless you are, you know, kind of a really big moneymaker for them. It really is mostly up to the writer.
Well, and even for the very biggest ones, other than doing like maybe a road trip like the week or 2 weeks after a release, that's about it. And the rest is up to the author to do.
Yeah, pretty much. Absolutely. Which is why even someone like Nora Roberts, you know, possibly the biggest living American writer, she has her own publicist, because you kind of need to take charge of a lot of that sort of thing yourself.
Now, when, of course, we'd already heard about the story of how you started writing and with not having planned to become a writer, mm-hmm. but the passion has stayed with you over the years.
Yeah, on and off. I mean, I actually at various times have tried to quit writing and gone away for a while, and that kind of really seems to refresh me, and I come back and start writing again. The first time was after early in my career, I had written 12 romance novels back-to-back in 5 years, 12 published ones. I'd also written lots of proposals that didn't sell, and I just got very burned out, and I quit, and I had saved up enough money to go to Africa for almost a year, so I did that. I just traveled, and when I came back, it had been such a relief to get away from publishing. I was kind of ambivalent at first and wasn't sure I would write again, but then I started. And I wrote for, you know, I wrote a bunch of books. And then again, maybe 10 years after that, I got very burned out again. And so I quit writing for a while, and I went off to graduate school, and I went to the Middle East and did an internship. And then I finally came back. So I go through phases where I just think, oh, I've had enough of this. I'm leaving. And I go away for a while, but I always do come back. And I think having come back again, this time I've resolved that, you know, yes, I'm always going to write. Sometimes I will take a break, but I'm always going to come back to it.
And, of course, over the years, you wrote a book that talks about sort of your wacky world.
Oh, mm-hmm.
There are so many things, you know, authors have so many challenges. The first, of course, just getting rejected and, mm-hmm. and having that whole process, it's hard for a person to be rejected once, but authors are often rejected many, many times, right?
Yeah, rejection is really part of the lifestyle. To some extent, that's changing now, because as I'm sure you know, self-publishing is really big now, and all you have to do, you know, you basically serve as your own publishing company. You know, you can produce ebooks, you can even produce print-on-demand books. You don't have to go through a publisher necessarily anymore. All of the logistics are much different than what I dealt with early in my career. And you can still be rejected by readers. I mean, you can still, you know, put your heart into a book and self-publish it and get it out there and nobody reads it. Or few people read it and they absolutely hate it and they say so in public reviews of the book. So even, I would say, in the self-publishing world, rejection is, you know, negative feedback part of the lifestyle. And certainly for anyone going the traditional route where you still submit your work to a publisher and hope that they will publish it, yeah, rejection is just part of the lifestyle. I was somewhat unusual in that the first book I ever wrote and sent out there got sold. It didn't sell immediately. I think like a dozen literary agents rejected me and a few publishers did. But within about a year, I sold that first book to a publisher, and that's all pretty unusual. It usually takes a lot longer and a lot more rejection and a lot more books written than that. But even so, after that, I think 4 of my next 6 books were rejected by my own publisher. And over the years, I've had, you know, lots and lots and lots of stuff rejected. The Esther Diamond series was rejected many times before it found a publisher. So if you can't deal with rejection, this is a pretty difficult profession to be in. What I find is, you know, I started out as an aspiring actress. So the way I look at it is, the really tough rejection is when you are standing up there auditioning for people. They are looking right at you as they're rejecting you, and you have to keep your game face on. That is so much harder. As a writer, you know, I get a letter or an email that's very specifically rejecting a piece of work, and I'm alone at home in private when I get this rejection. I think that is just so much easier than what performers go through, and that's the way I.
Yeah, and the chocolate ice cream is right there in the freezer, so you know.
Yes, exactly.
The aspiring actress really doesn't have that choice because, or if she does eat it, then she's going to have to throw it up. So it's not the same thing.
Or she'll at least have to like go to the gym for hours afterwards. Whereas, you know, nobody cares what I look like. I can put on those pounds of eating all that ice cream, and it doesn't really affect my ability to earn a living. But yeah, an actress like Esther Diamond really has to be careful about indulging in that kind of thing.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Esther Diamond, because I think she, you know, you come across a character every once in a while who is just delights you, sort of tickles you. And I think anybody, I always find it so difficult to imagine anyone rejecting Esther Diamond, because just as a character, as sort of a person, once you read about Esther, you have to like her. You have to find this delight in her. And of course, all the other characters that are in her life, and she has some strange characters in her life. But
indeed.
But tell us about Esther, because I think that if any of my listeners are looking for a book, and I think I mentioned it to you in an email that when I was when we were here without any air conditioning during Hurricane Irma, and I was just rereading books. I couldn't concentrate on new books. One of the books I reread was The Doppelgangster, simply because it makes me smile. It makes me happy.
Well, people have sometimes written me to say things like, I got a call from my doctor after hours saying, oh, my God, I've just seen the test results. Go to an ER right now. Don't even pack a bag. Go to the hospital now. And so this woman goes, and she said, when I sent my husband home to get my belongings for me, I told him, and you must stop at a bookstore and get me an Esther Diamond novel, or I'm going to lose my mind here. And fortunately, her story turned out okay. She was safe at home and healthy again when I spoke with her. But another woman said, she had just buried her father, and reading an Esther Diamond novel kind of helped her get through the horrible week of burying her father. And I get a number of letters like that, and I always feel like, that is like the absolute pinnacle of what I would hope for an Esther Diamond novel, that when horrible things are happening, like your town has been, all your power's been wiped out by a hurricane, or you're under terrible stress, or you're grieving, that this novel will just be like a big hug. It will cheer you up. It will make you smile. It will take you away from whatever is actually happening in your life at that moment, when your life is not the greatest place to be on that particular day.
Well, they do. And as I said, Esther herself, because tell everyone where the name comes from. So,
Esther Diamond, it just popped into my head and I didn't even really think about it. It was actually after the first book was published, someone pointed out to me, I had totally blanked on this. Esther Diamond was my great grandmother's name. And as soon as, a family friend pointed that out, I was like, oh my gosh, how could I have overlooked that or even forgotten that? Because I did know her name, but it just, I just thought of the name. It felt like, yeah, that's the name I'm going to use, and I went ahead with it. But that was actually my paternal great-grandmother's name, my father's maternal grandmother. And Esther Diamond is an actress in her 20s living in New York. She's talented, but, because acting's a tough profession, she has not yet found success. She auditions a lot. She gets some roles. But she also, to support herself, is often doing horrible jobs. She works as a singing waitress in a mob joint.
I love that one.
She works as Santa's Jewish elf in a department store.
Oh, that was good.
She's in the book I'm currently writing. She is basically working as an all-purpose Girl Friday for an absolutely nightmarish man on Wall Street. I will say that the horrific boss she has in this book is somewhat based on a former boss of mine, a guy who was a nightmare to work for, who eventually fired me without cause. So I do get my revenge sometimes in some of these books. If there's someone who just really, really gets my gall, sometimes a version of them does wind up in a novel. And, maybe that person gets eaten by a monster. It's not my fault. So Esther is she is very humorous. She's very strong-willed. She's a little bit self-absorbed. And I think her kind of bottom-line morality is that everybody has a responsibility when they see evil around them to do something about it. You don't get just to keep going on about your business as if evil isn't going to affect you and your community. So she tends to run toward danger rather than running away from it. And these being fantasy novels, as well as comedies, the danger is frequently supernatural, and she doesn't have any supernatural abilities herself, but she encounters various eccentric characters who do, and she has her friends and her foes who she works with and works with against in these strange adventures that she gets involved in, and that's Esther.
And they are, I think they're delightful books, and I hope that my listeners will, as I said, I started with Doppelgangster, and I just, all of them, I go along and I read them and I think, well, it just, when a book, when a character stays with you and it just makes you feel good to read the book, I think it's an important book. So I'm glad that you're working on a new one, and we'll all be looking forward to that, because you know, one of the joys of life is to really to find this way to share your stories and both, you know, as you said, you can get revenge against some people in the books, which is sort of fun, and I think that's part of the fun of being an author, that there's so many things you can do with a book.
Absolutely. You know, one of the other things I do with these books is we call it a Tuckerization. There was this writer, he's passed away many years ago, named Wilson Bob Tucker, and he would put the names of people he knew in his books. And you wouldn't actually put that person in the book. You would just take their name, and you might even use their name in a very outlandish or amusing way. And I started doing that with the Esther books, and the names of friends and relatives that I use, the characters don't bear any resemblance to them typically, but it's just fun knowing that my friends or people who know me will be reading along and they'll suddenly go, oh my God, that's so-and-so's name. And that's been, you know, a fun little thing, and it doesn't, you know, affect the quality of the books or anything. Nobody who doesn't know me personally would know who I'm putting in the book. But, for example, in Abracadaver, there's a former underwear model named Tim Haslett, a man, and that's based on the name is a name of a good friend of mine, Tim Haslett. So he told me he was actually at tire discounters in the waiting room for hours just reading one of my books, and it was that book, and suddenly he's in a public place and he comes across his own name, former underwear model, Kim Haslett. And he just burst out laughing and couldn't stop. And so people in this waiting room are staring at him. And he's like, how could I even possibly explain this to these people who are staring at me? Something like that.
Well, I'm going to have to read your novel, see if I land up Patsy with a Z in one of them, right? And then the next, I don't know what career you will give me. I'm not a former underwear model. Well, I don't know. I wouldn't mind. Actually, I wouldn't mind.
It can be quite dignified, though. Yeah. A cousin of mine a cousin of my dad's who died this year, he was in Vampirazzi, Robert Hamburg, as the Robert Hamburg Theater, where all of the story takes place. So it's not always something like an underwear model.
Oh, that's nice. I like that, having a theater named after you. That's really good.
Is that a hint?
Well, yeah. Isn't it fun? Isn't it fun to be a writer? Really, although you face so many problems, and as in your book, you write about your fun with copy editors. You had more fun with copy editors than anybody I know.
Rejection, Romance, and Royalties: The Wacky World of a Working Writer. That's based on the Novelist Inc. column that I write every month. In fact, I just realized it's been a while since that book came out, and I have so many more columns, so I'm starting to put them into a couple of more books, and I'll probably like reissue the whole thing as a set of three. Because it turns out, like, wow, I've written quite a lot over the years about being a writer. But yeah, the stuff with copy editors, also the stuff with production gaffes, things that go wrong at the publishing house in production, such as someone else's name is put on your book, or halfway through the book, it appears that, like, somebody in the production house dropped half of your manuscript and bumped into someone who dropped a manuscript, and all the pages got mixed up. Like, there was a book about the Old West that when you're reading it halfway through it, it's suddenly a book about vampires. Two different novels got completely mixed up with each other in the publishing process. Loads of things like that happen at publishing houses. Copy editors are a familiar story for everybody. Almost every writer has had some terrible experience with a copy editor. The standout example for me is my friend Pat Rice, who had this copy edit that was full of these horrible, nasty margin notes, like, ugh, this is stupid, I hate this book, you know, horrible, horrible notes. And so, now Pat is a really reasonable person. She does not easily get riled, but she called the editor to complain, like, this was inappropriate, this was over the top, this is unprofessional. So the editor looked into it and found out the copy editor had been committed to a psychiatric institution right after finishing that copy edit.
Oh, that's good. And that story is available in your book, which is?
Mm-hmm. Say, Rejection, Romance, and Royalties, The Wacky World of a Working Writer.
Okay. Well, Laura Resnick, I want to thank you so much for being on the program today. It's always a delight to talk to you. And when the new book comes out, let me know the release date, and you can come on the program on the release date. How about that?
That would be fantastic. And meanwhile, I will give you by email the information about Novelist Inc. and the conference.
Okay. Well, again, thank you so much for being on. And again, to your father, I just want to say happy, happy birthday to Mike Resnick, who has been such a good friend to Joy on Paper and to me. And it's wonderful that he wakes up early for me. I hope your mother doesn't get jealous, because, you know, I always sign my emails to him, hugs, kisses. I don't. So, you know,
I think
she's used to women just going crazy. I'm in love with his brain because it's so brilliant. And you are just wonderful, Laura. So thank you again for being on the program today.
Well, thank you for inviting me. It was good to talk to you, Patsy.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
Wow. I like her. And she's just fun. And her father is absolutely delightful. So I want to thank them both for being on today, because there's so many things happening. One of the things, as everybody knows, Facebook is my word for the year. And it is already March. Oh, my goodness. The time has gone so quickly. Facebook, Facebook, Facebook. Please go to my Facebook page and like me. It's Radio Joy on Paper. And then go to my website, and I have the interviews up. I will have today's interview and other interviews up. And it's Radio-Joy on Paper for the website. And just go there and you will be able to hear about all of the different authors that I've had on recently, including Kristen Hanna, whose great book, The Nightingale, is being made into a film. And she's going to be on the set, and she's going to come back and report to us about her adventures on the set as she watches her book made into a film. And that is one of the joys of life, is to see your words on paper, or to hear them in an audible book, or to hear them spoken on the big screen. And it could happen to you. All you have to do is sit down and start writing, and write a page a day. And in a year, you'll have 365 pages, and you might have a bestseller on your hands. You never know. It takes passion and it takes perseverance. So make sure that you listen every week to Joy on Paper, and I hope that you will be inspired by all of the wonderful authors that I interview right here. And you will, what can you do? Start writing. That's the best thing. And meanwhile, say something nice to somebody today, and I will start by saying something nice to Big Ed, because he's always so nice to me, and he's saluting me, and I salute him back. And that's it. It's been a fun day. Bye-bye now.